Thanks for listening to Access Utah. We reached our last segment with NYU journalism professor Mitchell Stevens. His recent article in Politico is headlined, Goodbye Nonpartisan Journalism and Good Riddance. It's been getting a lot of attention. He's author of several books, including The Voice of America, Lowell Thomas and the Invention of 20th Century Journalism. And you're welcome to join the conversation at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Our toll-free phone number is 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. 10 or 15 minutes left with Mitchell Stevens. Mitchell Stevens, was consuming your Twitter feed, which is, by the way, at Mitch Stevens NY. And you said somewhere here that you, as you said, you were immersed in doing your book. You emerged to find a reaction to this article. Twitter can be a fairly rough place, rough and tumble. But you got this response. I want to read part of this. You put it up on your Twitter feed. This is the executive editor of New York Times responding to your article, disagreeing in some respects. He says, I think there's tremendous value in having a place when you pick it up, in whatever form you pick it up, where you're just learning what happened in Syria, you're just learning what happened in Afghanistan, and you're not questioning whether the reports from Afghanistan are slanted to support one side of the debate or another. I think those issues are just too important to only present one side. By the way, that does not mean failing to draw conclusions. Some of the greatest journalism in the history of the New York Times was the coverage of the war in Vietnam, and some of the coverage of the war in Afghanistan where on-the-ground reporters drew conclusions. But those conclusions would be far, far less powerful if you thought those people who just got off the airplane had a point of view. What's your response?
Yeah, I was really interested in that. I think he's disagreeing with me, but he's not entirely disagreeing with me. This is Dean Baquet, the really fine journalist and the current main editor, top editor at the New York Times, and. You know, it's interesting the way he talks about conclusions. It's okay to draw conclusions. Well, yeah, it is okay to draw conclusions. So he wants to draw a line between the conclusions a reporter draws after he spent a lot of time in Syria or in Afghanistan. I guess you can't spend much time in Syria nowadays, or Iraq, and the conclusions a reporter might have in arriving in Afghanistan or Iraq. Or near Syria. And, you know, that's kind of interesting, but I'm not sure we want journalists to be these so naive politically that they don't really have points of view on things. You know, the one editor of the Washington Post once announced that he's not going to vote because that would mean he has a kind of bias. Oh, come on, that's silly. You know, I want the editor of the Washington Post and I want reporters for the New York Times to, you know, have followed the news and to have some perspectives on things. Now, I certainly wouldn't disagree that if you go to Afghanistan and you see things that don't support the point of view that you may have arrived with, I want you to, of course, report them. You know, say what you see, be honest, be fair. But I don't think it's so terrible if a New York Times reporter arrives in Afghanistan thinking, oh, you know, we should send more troops, or on the other hand, thinking we shouldn't be there anymore. It's not working. Longest war in American history. And I certainly do agree that if, you know, a Times reporter is there long enough and has a perspective on the situation, a conclusion, to use Dean Baquet's formulation, I think it's great if they express that conclusion. You know, Lowell Thomas, who, you know, I wrote this book about, is, was a great journalist in a lot of ways. He had amazing accomplishments. He was, you know, in his early 20s, and he assigns himself to cover World War One, and he ends up in the Middle East, and he ends up seeing this blue-eyed, beardless man walking around in Arab robes, and he says, ooh, that's a story. And he comes back with the story of Lawrence of Arabia. He discovered Lawrence of Arabia, then he made him famous with a travelogue full of film and stills taken by the only journalist to see Lawrence of Arabia in Arabia, And his travelogue was seen by a total of about 2 million people around the world. And Lowell Thomas goes to Afghanistan when it was forbidden. In 1949, Lowell Thomas rode a mule caravan into Tibet, where he met the Dalai Lama right before the Chinese communists came in. So this was an amazing journalist who went places, who brought the world to America. But, you know, I think he could have, you know, I think there was a limit to his kind of right down the middle journalism, to his kind of balanced journalism. I think, you know, we could have learned a little bit more if Lowell Thomas did have a little more of a point of view on events. And I think the Times editor, in that quote from him you read, is a little too paranoid about point of view.
I want to follow up with that. Maybe expand on that. What could have been gained? You say Lowell Thomas, extraordinary journalist. You know, we learned a lot through him. What could have been expanded on? What could have been better if he'd had a point of view, open point of view?
Well, Lowell Thomas also lived in an age where news wasn't pouring out of our smartphones the way it is today, where just finding out, you know, what was going on in World War II was kind of difficult. And so when Americans sat down at 6:45 every evening, and I have in the book lots of stories about how everything would get quiet at the dinner table because Lowell Thomas was on, and people in the whole family had to listen to him. And when Lowell Thomas said at the end of his newscast, as he always said, "So long until tomorrow," that was cue that people should bring dessert, and dessert would arrive. So the whole country's listening to him, and they're learning, about what's happening in Europe with World War II, what's happening in Asia. And Thomas traveled to these places and broadcast back on his newscast via shortwave radio and so on. And just finding out what was going on was really important. It's not so difficult for us to find out what's going on. And I think we need a little more than that. And Lowell Thomas didn't give you a huge amount of insight into what was going on. And maybe that was right for those days. Maybe that was needed in those days. But now, when a major news story breaks and it just pops out of our phones and out of our laptops and is on TV and on the radio when we're in the car and coming in podcasts and stuff, now I think we can ask more of our journalists, something that Lowell Thomas didn't give, but I think a lot of journalists today are giving, which is perspective, insight, intelligence, and understanding. Wisdom, I call it, in another book I wrote.
I want to get into talking a little bit about the future of journalism. Of course, you're at a journalism school, right? That impulse, I mean, it's probably still there, journalism students, that Lowell Thomas, I think he assigned himself to go cover the Middle East, right? He had that impulse to go and find out what was going on.
Yeah, and I'm always telling my students, just go. And it's a lot easier to just go. I mean, for Lowell Thomas to just go. I mean, this is before sound film was invented, and he took a film cameraman with him. This was 14 years after the Wright brothers' first flight. He got his film camera up in an airplane flying over the pyramids and got film from on top of the pyramids. He was amazing, and he got funding for this from rich people in Chicago, where he'd been a journalist. He was an extraordinary man who knew no fear and spared no expense. That's one of the reasons writing his story was so fun. But I do, you know, and so my journalism students may not have quite that aggressiveness, quite that boldness, but I do encourage them to go. And obviously all you almost need is your smartphone, and you can take video and you can take stills and you can record audio. And we don't need another journalist in in New York going to press conferences, or Washington or LA or San Francisco just going to the same press conferences as other journalists. You know, we need more journalists in Africa and Asia telling us what's going on in the world. You know, I don't encourage anybody to go someplace unsafe, but you know, it's a wonderful thing to do when you get out of journalism school to just go. And that was one of the things I liked most about the Lowell Thomas's journalism. He went. He went around the world many times. He went everywhere, and if a country was forbidden, that was just a challenge for him. I'm going to get in, and he usually did.
I want to maybe follow up. We'll end with maybe your ideas of, you know, the good and bad, the worries and the hopes on the future of journalism. But I want to make sure I get this in. This is a recent poll, which is fairly worrying, at least to me. This is a poll taken by UtahPolicy.com. The question was to a sampling of Utahns: do you believe journalists make up anonymous sources for stories, or are those anonymous sources trustworthy? 45% of the respondents said journalists make up anonymous sources. That gets to a trust issue.
Yeah, that's scary. I don't think that's true. I really don't think that's true. I know a lot of journalists, and you know, and one thing about this Trump story is, you know, there's been some great journalism, but there also apparently been some brave people within the Trump administration who don't like what's going on and are willing to leak it. And I think, you know, it's always good to look at things carefully and question and doubt. And, you know, I certainly support that when reading journalism. But I think most of the time, journalists from places like the New York Times and CNN and Washington Post and the LA Times and, you know, and the big newspapers in Utah and so on, they're pretty straight about that. I mean, if you make up a source, man, and somebody catches you on it, there goes your job. Mm. We have enough stories like that in the last decade that we teach in journalism school. I don't think there's a lot of that going on at all.
Let me, you just have a couple minutes left. I want to look to the future, maybe just briefly. As you look at the future of journalism and the news media, what's your top worry, and maybe what's your top hope?
Well, my top hope is that we'll continue to get more really interesting voices helping us think about the news. You know, more scientists helping us think about science, more economists helping us think about economics. I think the news is getting smarter, and I expect it to keep getting smarter. I think video continues to have unexplored potential. I think we can look forward to more from that. And, you know, and I like the fact that amateurs are able to comment on the news today. I mean, sometimes just angry and loud and even obnoxious, but some of the people who aren't journalists who get to make their thoughts heard on Twitter and Facebook and on the web and on and websites and blogs are really good. My fear for journalism, I'm really afraid that, you know, a significant percentage of this country is going to think that our best and most dedicated news organs are somehow fake or somehow making things up. I don't think that's true, and that starts to get scary if people no longer can trust the news they're getting.
Let's see, we have about a minute left. Parting shot on Lowell Thomas. He's such a fascinating figure. You brought up his connection with Lawrence of Arabia. There's just many, many stories like that. What's the big takeaway you'd like people to know about Lowell Thomas?
Well, one thing is just how journalistic fame fades, how fleeting it is. I mean, this guy was so well known to everybody, and now, you know, people under the age of 65 never heard of him. And the same thing is going to happen to Walter Cronkite. It is happening to Walter Cronkite. My students don't know who Tom Brokaw is. Anderson Cooper, who's not as well known, and I mean, he's going to be forgotten in 30, 40 years. But, you know, Lowell Thomas just lived an amazing life. Walter Cronkite, they did a primetime special on him when he died on CBS, and Walter Cronkite hosted it. Walter Cronkite, his biographer told me, had Lowell Thomas as his hero, and Cronkite said about him, he did 2 centuries worth of living in his 89 years. This man really lived. He knew how to live and go places and do things. And so, I mean, he had, you know, as a journalism professor and somebody thinks about journalism, there was an awful lot in his story. I mean, really helped me understand 20th century journalism and 21st century journalism, because in some ways it's being lived against Lowell Thomas. But it was also fun because he just had an amazing life, met everybody, went everywhere, a real adventurer.
Well, the book's well worth a read, The Voice of America, Lowell Thomas and the Invention of 20th Century Journalism. The author has joined us, New York University journalism professor Mitchell Stevens, and his recent article in Politico is also well worth a read. It's headlined, Goodbye Nonpartisan Journalism and Good Riddance. Mitchell Stevens, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really enjoyed it.
I hope you'll join me tomorrow. We are talking with the author of a provocative new book. It's called Behaving Badly, The New Morality in Politics, Sex, and Business. Eden Collinsworth enlists the famous, the infamous, and heretofore unheard of to unravel how we make moral choices in an increasingly complex and ethically flexible age. That's tomorrow. I hope you join us. Thanks for joining me today.